Welcome to ARIN Podcast Luxembourg, our podcast channel that explores the latest legal and regulatory updates in Luxembourg by weighing in on our experts' profound experience. We are introducing our new podcast series, All About Private Debt. Our experts from different practice areas come together with guest speakers to debate hot topics in the private debt market.
Welcome to this podcast on private debt. My name is Francis Kass. I'm a partner at Arendt, where I work in our fund formation group. Today's podcast will focus on regulatory requirements for loan originating funds. We will in particular discuss about the expected impact of the forthcoming IFMD review on this type of funds. To discuss about this topic, I'm very pleased to welcome our two speakers who have both substantial knowledge in the area of private credit, Nick Smith and Claude Niedner. Nick Smith is a director at AIMA, the Alternative Investment Management Association. Nick is in charge of private credit at AIMA's private credit affiliate, the Alternative Credit Council, or ACC, where Nick focuses on public policy and regulatory issues affecting private credit managers. Claude Niedner is a partner and chairman of Arendt Medernach, where he works in the fund formation area. Claude is also chairman of the Regulation Advisory Board and chairman of the Alternative Investments Committee at the Association for the Luxembourg Fund Industry, or ALFI. So many thanks to both of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Nick, you have been following very closely the elaboration process of the IFMD review. Can you give us some background information on the context in which this specific regime for loan origination funds has been adopted? What was the main motivation for policymakers?
Hi Francis, and thank you very much for inviting me to speak. I'm delighted to join you on this podcast. I think it's helpful to recall that the regulatory treatment of loan funds in Europe has been on the agenda for several years now. ESMA published an opinion on this in April 2016, and other member states in Europe have gone their own way by implementing national legislation governing the rules around loan funds. The success of private credit is very much the source of this interest. The sector, while it's still relatively small compared to the broader asset management sector and indeed the banking sector, it is very much a coming force. And so this is seen to have created a need for additional regulatory oversight. There's a few aspects to this. On the macroprudential side, regulators would like more visibility of the sector, whereas from a market perspective, there's some concern that we're seeing a fragmented market develop across Europe. At the same time, there is a strong recognition, and it's pleasing to see this reflected in the revised AIFMD text, about the role that loan funds play in the financing of the economy, particularly in Europe, where we still retain a dependency on the banking sector, and a view that regulation can support the growth of the market in Europe. And this is the rationale behind the passport, or the lending passport, that they're trying to introduce with the amendments to AIFMD. Now, while our industry may not feel like the market today warrants regulatory intervention, and it's interesting to see the evidence of practices or risk that can't be managed within the existing framework. These proposals are ultimately trying to balance the two objectives of providing greater oversight while at the same time stimulating the growth of the market in Europe.
Thank you, Nick. Claude, can you comment on this initiative from a Luxembourg perspective? What is the initial feedback that you have received from the industry?
Yes, thank you, Francis, and I'm also very pleased to join this discussion, I think, on this recent proposal. I think Luxembourg obviously looked a lot at this initiative on regulating loan funds within the AFMD. And I think one important aspect clearly was sort of the success of private credit, in particular also the success of private credit within Luxembourg investment funds. So we saw significant developments, and it's an important asset class, I would say, already today, sort of in the Luxembourg market. In the context of the AFMD, because the AFMD doesn't expressly provide any provisions on loan origination activities, Luxembourg took the liberal approach to say, well, AIFs, which are managed by Luxembourg AFIMs, or even Luxembourg AIFs, which are managed by non-Luxembourg AFIMs, actually authorized to carry out loan origination activity. And I think Luxembourg was one of the jurisdictions which already back in 2013 was quite clear about that, that this was actually permitted, and this also contributed to the development of Luxembourg. And even recently, no more than 6 months ago, the Luxembourg regulator even further clarified their position, adding an additional element of flexibility. So when I'm asked to comment on this initiative from a Luxembourg perspective, I must say that when the Luxembourg industry looked at the proposal, at least the discussions initially around this regulatory regime for loan originating funds, we were somehow concerned that we would now have an additional level of product regulation within the AFMD, which is a manager's directive. And we are concerned that the proposal which would be made by the European Commission would perhaps unduly restrict access to loan origination activity by alternative investment funds. And I think the good point, I must say, now with the proposal is that the proposal is actually not extremely restrictive, but we certainly are going to discuss about this. So I think looking at how this developed and looking about at the entire discussion around shadow banking, I would have expected perhaps something more restrictive. I see that this is a proposal which I believe is helpful and which will also help sort of private credit to develop further in Europe.
Thank you, Claude. Now, you've already touched on it. Some of the new rules seem to reflect market practice, while others clearly introduce new requirements, which may be considered as an unnecessary burden. So which of the new requirements do you expect that the industry will try to challenge? Maybe it's Nick, would you like to go first?
Thanks, I don't mind starting here, Frances. I think to Claude's point just now that you may be expecting something more stringent. I think we within AIMA and the ACC and indeed the broader industry have spent a lot of the last 6 to 9 months speaking with the Commission and other stakeholders, trying to help them understand how our sector works today. And you see that reflected in the text, which now is much closer to how funds and managers operate than it might have been. A good example of this is the requirement for the AIFM to implement effective policies and processes for the granting of loans. This seems like a codification of existing practices. Whereas earlier discussions, could have included the addition of requirements that are more akin to what you see in the banking model. So, separation of credit granting teams from workout teams, which doesn't really match the model that we see in the asset management sector. Similarly, some of the provisions around the prohibition on lending to the AIFM or depository, I think this is kind of relatively good sense in some respects to prevent lending to related parties, which is a common issue in the credit world, regardless of whether you're a fund, a bank, or any other type of lender. And so it's nice to see a lot of the feedback that the industry's given reflected in some aspects of the text.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe if I can add to what Nick has been commenting, I think one important component in the proposal, which I must say the industry, at least not where I participated to the discussions, really discussed, was that there would also be clarity that loan origination is going forward to be a permitted activity for European AIFs, which are managed by a European AIFM. And I think that is a point which somehow was lacking previously, because some jurisdictions actually were considering that this was not a permitted activity. And that, therefore, if you wanted sort of to go into loan origination activities in these jurisdictions, you either had to use a domestic vehicle, or you needed to have sort of a license sort of as a credit institution. And I think that's a big step in the right direction. And I think it will also help the European economy. So we don't only have rules which are added. Let's speak about the stick. We also have a carrot. We have a carrot there which allows sort of AIFMs going forward to be able to carry out that activity in any European member state without any concerns in relation thereto. And I think that's a very, very helpful point. The other element, if I look at the rules which I would want to mention, Nick, for instance, mentioned the effective policies and procedures. In Luxembourg already today, the Luxembourg regulator had a practice of categorizing somehow AIFMs which had loan origination activities as carrying out an other activity. If I take the reporting standards and say this is other loan origination, and you were only allowed in Luxembourg to carry out that activity as an AIFM if you already had sort of effective policies and procedures. So in that sense, if I look at the Luxembourg market and the Luxembourg AIFMs, for those who are active in that segment already, they at least sort of will be well prepared on that side concerning sort of the policies and procedures.
Thank you. As some of the provisions of the draft proposal seem to be a bit ambiguous. For example, the proposal focuses on loans granted by funds. But what about loans originated by SPVs set up as subsidiaries of a fund? Will that be permissible?
Well, maybe I can take that one sort of from a legal perspective. If I look at the AIFMD sort of as it stands and as it stood sort of since 2011 or 2013 when it had to be transposed, many alternative investment funds have been investing in underlying assets, whether we speak about loans, whether we speak about real estate, whether we speak about private equity, investing via special purpose vehicles and using sort of intermediate companies in order to efficiently or more efficiently structure the investments. The AIFMD in itself, the directive doesn't expressly sort of refer to or recognize those special purpose vehicles, but the AIFMR, where we speak about the depository rules, does refer to the concept of controlled subsidiaries. And so there's an implicit sort of, well, even explicit sort of recognition of AIFs investing are using sort of those of intermediary vehicles. And therefore, I also believe that in that context, where you have an AIF who's permitted to go into that activity of loan origination because it has an AIFM who has sort of this activity permission, but then it should also be able to invest or to grant those loans using intermediary companies in order to do so.
Thanks, Claude. I think I'd add to that by, you know, look, if you look at the text, the Annex 1 now recognises that lending is a legitimate activity of an AIFM, and it specifically refers to the AIFM rather than the AIF. We have spent a lot of time trying to explain to policymakers how credit managers in the market today use a variety of structures to lend, whether that's, you know, special purpose entities, individual client accounts or funds, and so various entities may be the lender of record, and therefore if you are trying to introduce a lending passport and support the growth of cross-border lending across Europe, then you should continue to focus on the activity of the AIFM rather than move into any specific product rules that target, you know, particular structures, for example, as this is only going to add complexity to how one manages, you know, seek to comply with any requirements. And then two, from a supervisory point of view, it makes it much more challenging. So from a policy design perspective, we will be encouraging member states and members of the European Parliament to try and look at this aspect of the proposals from the AFEM perspective rather than the narrower perspective of the AFE.
Maybe if I may just add one point to Nick's comments on Annex 1 and originating loans being added as a permitted activity. I think this will be read by many, or most, if not everybody, as meaning that this is just a clarification that originating loans is a permitted activity of AFEM, and they not be viewed as actually sort of a new activity, which could in the past actually not be carried out by AFEMs. And I think that's also an important point, because AFEMs who already carry out that activity would just continue to do so, and probably regulators will come in and be saying, well, now we have that activity, maybe you need to apply or make a specific application to add that activity to your permitted activities. But for those, it will be just continuing sort of as they have been doing so far, maybe with taking into account going forward the relevant restrictions which we have been discussing about.
Okay. Thank you both. Maybe one question on the interaction with the LTIF review. In the past, the LTIF regime has been used by a number of actors for the purpose of structuring loan funds. But what will change going forward? In which cases will fund initiators choose an LTIF, and when will they prefer to set up their funds under the sole IFMD regime?
Well, I'm happy maybe to go first, if that's fine. I think on my first sort of comment would be the LTIF regime has not been extremely successful. We know that there are sort of probably around 50 LTIFs sort of altogether, maybe within the European Union. Luxembourg is the leader in that market, but the regulation, which dates back to 2015, could have been more successful. Now, there is an LTIF review, and I think that has also been very, very positive, and I'm expecting more LTIFs to be set up going forward. But if I look at sort of the past, indeed, some LTIFs have indeed been set up, because LTIF expressly were permitted to grant loans and to originate loans. And therefore, if you wanted to go into certain jurisdictions, you could not do it with a AFEM managed by European AIFM, but you needed actually to take an LTIF in order to grant those loans. And so therefore, I think that reason to set up an LTIF would just go away. But nevertheless, I think the LTIF will be the vehicle of choice for those who, in a loan originating context, want to set up funds which reach out to retail investors. And I think this will probably be the main reason for setting up LTIFs, access to retail investors. And by the way, if I may make that comment, I think the proposal under the LTIF review regulation to add sort of an institutional investor type of component is something which probably is driven by the intention of the European Commission to say, well, we want to make the LTIF label available to institutional investors, but I'm not convinced that this will actually be really something institutional investors will be looking for, because under the AFMD, they have a very good regime, which is the AFMD regime, and AIFs managed by European AIFMs, I believe, will just very well suit sort of institutional investors.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess, what would I say about LTIF in addition? I think, first of all, we should give credit to policymakers here. Throughout the LTIF review, they have consulted with a broad range of industry stakeholders and tried to address the various challenges that we have identified with the LTIF. I recall we surveyed our members, in 2016 about whether they were looking at an LTIF, and I think about half of them were, but only a fraction of that translated into actual LTIFs, which shows that while potentially it's always been of interest, mainly with the lending and marketing passport that it entails, there's a huge amount that comes with the vehicle as it stands today that just wasn't attractive, wasn't aligned with the needs of investors. So credit where it's due to the European Commission for listening to that feedback and trying to address these issues. I think the delineation between professional and retail investors that you now see in the LTIF regulation is going to be extremely positive. Those two cohorts just, fundamentally have different needs, levels of sophistication, whatever you want to call it, when it comes to investment. And so we think that's a real positive, trying to make the LTIF work for both cohorts rather than trying to make one model that suits both of them. And I'd very much agree with Claude that the appeal to retail in particular is going to be a huge part of what makes LTIF hopefully more successful in the future. And we see this as part of a broader trend in the asset management sector that you might call the democratization of private assets. With vehicles like LTIF, LTAF in the UK, allowing greater retail participation and giving savers new opportunities that they don't currently have. So we're very, very positive, I think, towards the LTIF proposals. There's still, as always, a lot of clarification needed on how some of the amendments proposed last week will work in practice. But very much a case of a good starting point and something to build on.
Thank you, Nick. Maybe last question for each of you. Nick, what are the next steps in the legislative process and what is the expected timing?
Sure. So the European Commission is kind of one of three co-legislators alongside the Council of Member States and the European Parliament. And so what that means in practice is that the Member States and the European Parliament will have the opportunity to review the Commission's proposals and propose their own amendments. Now, in a very simple example, if they agree entirely with the Commission's proposals, then it's a simple kind of ratification process. But more typically, but both entities will look to make their own reforms to what the Commission has proposed to ensure it aligns with their expectations and policy position. So that can take any length of time, but we're typically expecting somewhere between 12 and 24 months before any proposals would be finalised. So that provides the industry with an opportunity to try and help these co-legislators think about the legislation. We will be spending time talking to member states across Europe, working with the Parliament to support their understanding of how the proposals affect the private credit sector in Europe today, and maybe addressing some of the points that Claude and I have discussed around focusing on the activity of the AFIM, as well as any practical challenges that we identify with specific reforms proposed.
Thank you, Nick. And Claude, what is the expected impact of the AFMD review on the Luxembourg markets? Do you expect that Luxembourg will be able to build on these proposals to strengthen its position as a jurisdiction of choice for the creation of loan funds?
Well, I think the proposal, as I mentioned, is a welcome proposal from a Luxembourg perspective. Luxembourg, as you mentioned, has already a strong position. But what is really added is this carrot element, sort of this confirmation that there is a passport available for AIFs, which would be set up in Luxembourg, whether managed by a Luxembourg AIFM or by an European AIFM in another jurisdiction, to grant loans to borrowers in any of the European jurisdictions. And that sort of clarity or certainty was not available so far. So I could imagine that sort of the the private credit activity, which we have seen in Luxembourg funds, which has already been strong and which has been growing, would even grow further because of this certainty which is now there. And Luxembourg has always been able to benefit from a situation where an additional passport was granted or confirmation ration to an additional passport was granted. And I think that's the very situation we are in here with this proposal on the loan origination in funds under this AFMB review. So I think this is a positive element for Luxembourg.
Okay, well, many thanks to the both of you for these extremely interesting insights. I'm sure that the topic of the AFMD review will still keep us busy for the months and years to come. So this closes today's podcast. So again, many thanks to both of you, and many thanks for listening.
Thank you, Francis. Thank you, Claude. Great to speak with you both.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this private debt podcast. We hope you found it interesting. If you would like more information about our private debt expertise, we invite you to visit our website, www.achent.com. If you don't want to miss our latest episode, please feel free to subscribe to our podcasts, available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.